Well, sticking with the visit to Australia by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, Barry O'Farrell is the former Australian High Commissioner to India, serving in the role between 2020 and 2023. He's also former New South Wales Premier and now serves as a special advisor to the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Sydney on India. Barry O'Farrell joined me a little earlier. Barry O'Farrell, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
Narendra Modi has now visited Australia three times in a decade. Prior to that, no Indian PM had visited Australia in almost 30 years. How have the relations between the two countries shifted in recent years, in your view?
I think, ironically, COVID reminded India, as well as other countries, about the need to have resilient supply chains, able to access goods and elements that you need for your economy from reliable partners. COVID shut everything down, and suddenly I think India took another look at Australia and realised that we have complementary economies. We don't compete other than on the cricket field. And so whether it's critical minerals, whether it's now nuclear, uranium for nuclear power stations, there's a whole range of things that each of us can contribute to the other to grow our economies.
Do you have reservations about these plans for Australia to send uranium to India?
Well, many countries around the world, particularly in Europe and in Asia, have nuclear power plants. India established its first nuclear reactor to generate electricity in 1969. It's never had a reactor meltdown in the way that we've seen them in other countries. And of course, it is a non-fossil fuel. And India committed at the first COP that it would reduce fossil fuels by 50% by the year 2030. They're already reduced it by 36% thanks to massive solar farms, massive wind farms, and of course hydro. So it's a power mix. It's not what Australians seem to prefer, but it is something that works in countries like countries in Europe and in Asia.
But when it comes to safety issues around nuclear power and the use of this uranium, India is not a party to some of the international agreements and doesn't allow full access for inspectors. Is there a risk there?
But it does have a relationship with the United States established back in the 1980s, which ensures that there is a degree of reporting. But as I said, they've had them since 69. There's not been issues other than the general fear about reactors and the use of uranium.
Are you comfortable with the level of public embrace from Anthony Albanese for Narendra Modi?
Well, you know, we signed a trade deal with India towards the end of COVID. It's already generating $40 billion worth of two-way trade, which is good for India, it's good for Australia. It creates jobs in Australia, it creates jobs in India. And I think the Prime Minister Albanese, also understands that India is shaking itself from its non-aligned status that it had previously had. Previously, it didn't like joining things. It was standing on its own. It now realises that in areas like the Indo-Pacific, you need to work with other countries to ensure that you maintain that free, safe and open lifestyle and economies and political systems.
How does Australia deal with the matter of human rights and the Indian government's human rights record? Do you think Australia can realistically strengthen security and trade ties with India while still having frank conversations about allegations of human rights abuses?
Yes, and I remind you that India has a constitution that commits to providing all citizens and visitors with certain unalienable rights. It has, unlike us, a highly activist high court, it's actually called the Supreme Court in India, which can order governments to stop programs, order governments to start programs, order airlines to refund lost fares during COVID in a way that the Australian legal system doesn't. And look, you know, no democracy has a perfect record. We see what regrettably is happening in Australia at the present time in terms of what was once an agreed multicultural pact that we supported and understood the benefits of. We're now, you know, having those things risked. But can I say to you, Sally, that in the time that I was in India, We had many visitors from Australia. They never shied away from expressing Australian values, including some of the concerns that exist from time to time in countries.
On domestic matters, your former party, the Liberals, is under significant threat from One Nation across the country. Why do you think One Nation has been surging in the polls and taking Liberal voters particularly along the way?
There'll always be those running for Parliament who'll promise the world, even though everyone else knows the world can't be delivered. And I think that's just the difference. Look, the key for me, Sally, is that, you know, when you lose an election, stay your ground. You know, when we lose, we often go right to right wing, which tends to lose us votes, and we only get re-elected when we get back to the centre. The Labor Party at times ends up going off in the left, and they again win when they get to the centre. So my message to my former colleagues is, you know, stick to our knitting, stay in the middle ground, and get out there and explain, you know, what we stand for, how that benefits all Australians, regardless of nationality, agenda and all those other things.
The New South Wales anti-corruption body, ICAC, is currently involved in investigations into the city of Parramatta and separately is investigating alleged improper donations involving figures in the Liberal Party. How do you see the role of ICAC in New South Wales in maintaining standards of proper conduct and adherence to the law?
I've always been a supporter of ICAC, Sally, including my own episode at ICAC, and I've never wavered in that support for ICAC. ICAC's an important institution. It's doing the work that it should do. And I have to say that the new commissioner, or the current commissioner, John Hatzistogos, has certainly not only focused on things that are important or concerning, but also overcome some of the problems that ICAC's always had, which is the delay with which they make decisions. I waited 2 years to be told by ICAC, nothing to see here. That's simply unacceptable if you're in business, if you're in politics, because you can't operate with that over your head. So I think John Hatzistogos and ICAC are doing well, and I think that those who offend should be worried about having to front the ICAC and the interrogation that they put you through.
There's been a lot of renewed debate around the issue of multiculturalism at the state and national level. Do you think the Liberal Party has been responding well to some of those questions that have been raised?
I think we need to recognise that multiculturalism has been a net positive for our country. I'm old enough now to remember what food looked like in the 50s and the 60s, and thank goodness we now have far more choices. But more importantly, you had significant people that came to this country, whether building the Snowy Mountain Scheme, whether establishing Westfield and other corporations, which have created jobs, created wealth and lifted living standards. And I think for people to refuse to endorse multiculturalism, to refuse to acknowledge the benefits that our vibrant community from all around the world has delivered to us, you know, there's something wrong with that.
Has Angus Taylor been strong enough in articulating some of those benefits in your view?
Well, I think the only way you win elections is to get out there and talk consistently about those things you believe in. And, you know, the art of politics is bringing people to the table, bringing them to the ballot box to support you. And you do that by recognising not only what makes up Australia, but the people that have contributed to this great country.
More broadly, does the Liberal Party need to do a better job at articulating that?
Well, we've you know, Nick Reiner's victory, my victory, was off the back of strong support by Multicultural Australia across New South Wales. But many of these people have been here 20 or 30 years. They've been born here. For people to be talking about monoculture, I think is highly offensive to them, and simply, firstly, it's not going to happen, but B, you know, just neglects the benefits that multiculturalism has delivered to this country.
Barry O'Farrell, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Ellie.